Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
You're listening to Voices from the Prison Action Network, produced by the Hudson Mohawk Independent Media Center. I'm Judith. Today's guest is Owen Sutton. He's going to be telling us about his experiences being treated as a sex offender by his parole officer when his conviction had been for forgery. We may be hearing from Dan Salvin from the Center for Law and Justice, who helped Owen fight his wrongful treatment. He hasn't been able to connect with us yet. So welcome to the program, Owen.
Thank you so much.
So your story has multiple levels. As I understand it, there's the story of how you turned your life around after many years in and out of prison. There's the story of your drug addiction. There's the story of the stresses of your particular trials on parole, and the story of how you found Dan Salvin, how he helped you. But so why don't we go back to the beginning a little bit? Where'd you grow up, and how did all this start? And just tell us about it.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Harlem, New York, New York City, and I was about 15 when I was arrested for the case. And prior to that, I was in and out of reformatories and things of that nature. I couldn't read back then, so I wouldn't go to school. So I would sneak out of school all the time, and then I would get in trouble, you know, stealing. And then I was arrested. My first arrest was for robbery at the age of 9. And when I was 15, I remember being arrested for taking some boxes off a truck in the garment center, and the judge told me that. Well, matter of fact, that was my first time in adult court. And he told me if I come back that he was going to lock me up, send me to prison. So I was like being good, so to speak. And then there came a knock on the door, my mother's door, and she said, who was it? It was the police. And I'll never forget this. And they said, do you have a son named Owen? And she said, yes, I do. What's the problem? They said, no, we just want to talk to him. So they took me to the precinct, and before they took me to the precinct, they took me over by Mount Morris Park, and they showed me the steps, and they said, do you remember the steps? And I couldn't remember nothing but going up in the park with the rest of my little friends, and we throwing rocks at people and running back into the blocks and things like that. So I didn't want to say anything, you know, pertaining to that. But then when he said, didn't you rape and rob a woman on them steps, I felt better because I knew that they had the wrong person. However, when I said no, he turned around and smacked me and literally bust my lips. And I started crying. I told him I didn't do it. You know, I was never on the steps, you know, raping anyone. So they take me to the precinct and had like a axe handle without the axe on it, and they would hold my hand down and would be hitting the desk, trying to make me say that I did it, and I'm trying to pull away, and I'm crying, and my father and my sister was coming up the block. I didn't notice they told me about it, but they can literally hear me crying from the corner and hollering. So then they put me in a little cage, and they told me that I was going to go on a lineup. And they brought this Spanish fella in, and he couldn't talk English at all. I felt sorry for him. His eyes was red. He was crying. So they had him. Then they had a little short black man there also, and myself. So they had us to look at the door and to say, you know, I don't scream and I won't hurt you. So the Spanish dude, he couldn't really say it because he couldn't talk English. And then they had me to, I mean, had the other fella to say it, then they had me to say it. So then they put me back in the cage, and I said, can I please just talk to the lady? So they said, yes, excuse me. But when he came back, he said, she said you did it. So I said, well, can I talk to her? Because if she seen me, she would know that it's not me. So he took me in the room, and, you know, she looked at me and smiled and said, that's him. You know, and I broke down. I said, Miss, please, I never raped anyone. Please take a good look at me. So then, to make a long story short, I was sentenced to 1 to 5 years. But what it was is that when I was in court, the lawyer said, listen, he said, they don't want to charge you with the rape, you know, but because of your record, we just can't let you go. They're not going to just let you go. So you cop out to the attempted assault, not sexual assault, because she said you pushed her down and took her money. I think it was $40. So plead guilty to attempt assault, and, you know, you'll be home in a year. So I rebelled against that, and my mother told me something that really registered. She said, well, just think of the things that you did and never got arrested for, and just, you know, look at it as doing that time. So that's what I did. And when I went to Woodburn, correction, well, when I got to Aramira, during the 60s, they used to put you in a room and then tell you, actually, do you know why you're there? And you'd tell them, and do you know how much time you got? So I said, well, yes, well, I have a year. And he started laughing, and he said, no, you have 5 years. So I seen a counselor, and the counselor looked into it and found out that the woman was under mental observation when she pressed charges on me for, I forgot the terminology that he used. So the lawyer that my girlfriend, who became my wife for 33 years, she got me an attorney, but, you know, he wanted money, and she wasn't familiar with the law or with the system, and nor was I. Neither was I. So I was off and on parole and arrested prior to that. I never had to go to any sex offense classes or nothing. And I had a parole officer that's retired now. He was my counselor out at Collins. And my urine was dirty one day, and I said I was going to get some water, and I didn't come back. So he said that I had embarrassed him, and he would see that I get as much time as possible. So I violated, and they sent me to the drug program, the Woolett program. I returned home, and then he said that I had to attend a sex offense class. So I said, for what? I said, I never raped anyone. I said, if you look at my records, you'll see I was never convicted of it. I was just arrested for it. So he said, well, you just go in until we resolve this. So I had to comply with him. And the lady that ran the class, Miss Curtis, she constantly was telling me, because it's phase one and phase two, if you don't make it to phase two, then that's a violation. So she has a reputation for, you know, causing people to be violated. And she kept saying, so do you have any victims that you rape? I said, no, ma'am. She said, well, then you're not going to make it to the second phase, which is a violation. So I said, but I didn't do anything. So that was very stressful. And I would come out of there, I would be crying. I'm ready to go back to shooting dope. I'm ready to go back to Harlem. And I'll just call people, you know, because I started networking with people, and people would talk to me, and it'd make me stronger and stronger. But every time I would go to see her, she would always ask me about my denial. Why, you know, long as I'm in denial, I won't make it through the program. So I said, well, then I won't make it through the program. And she said, well, don't you know that that's going back to prison? I said, well, then I'll have to go back to prison, because I'm not going to admit to something that I never admitted to, because it never happened. So then I was crying, and my nephew, Terrence Stevens, he has a program called An Arms Reach, Parents Behind Bars, Children in Crisis. He told me to call the Center for Law and Justice. And I called, and I spoke to Mr. Dan Sullivan, and I explained everything to him, and he worked constantly with me. I mean, we stayed in communication, and, you know, he ended up sending letters there, and parole told him that I was off it, an independent evaluation, and I refused it, and said that I wanted to remain in the class because I might get something out of it, which was crazy to me because I never said that. So anyway, after Mr. Dan Sullivan had wrote to the people that he had written to, and I heard that they had got calls from some other people, senators or something to that nature, they gave me an independent evaluation at the Horizon program. So I went there for the independent evaluation, and they said that the treatment wasn't needed, which they stipulated if it was needed, I would have to go. If it wasn't, then I wouldn't. So the lady that, Ms. Doreen, that done the independent evaluation, you know, she told me that I didn't need treatment, and she didn't even see why they had subjected me to what they had subjected me to. but it was real strenuous, and I ended up in the hospital twice on a psych ward rather than to go out there and to do crazy stuff. You know, I talked to a doctor, and he had me to talk to another doctor, and they suggested for them two times that I just, you know, relaxed. And then they gave me some medication, but I didn't want medication because I didn't want to live with medication because I knew that life was going to throw situations and different things at me, and I just can't run to medication every time something happens. So I didn't want to take that, and then Miss Curtis tried to lock me up for not taking medication. Well, she can't lock me up, as she say, but it's obvious to a duck she can cause you to get violated.
I just wanted to comment that Dan Salvin really wanted to be on the air with us. That's the lawyer who helped you. But his child, I believe he had to have a conference with the teacher. I think it was his day.
Okay.
And he was hoping to be finished with that in time to be on the air, but he wasn't able to. I just want to remind our listeners that they're listening to Owen Sutton, who's on parole right now, right?
Yes, I am. I'm still on parole, and if I may, I just wanted to say that if there's any listeners out there that's incarcerated, you know, parole, as they say, you know, is a privilege, but it's sad because when I did my little research, I seen where parole was given for was created for two reasons. And the foundation of that is to protect society and to assist the parolees coming into society to help them adjust and take advantage of the resources. But they don't do the later. You know, you come out on parole, and, I mean, some people be down there, they got jobs, they come in and, you know, they tell parole officer that they're coming from work, and parole officer know that they're working, and they would come in and they would sit for half an hour or whatever, and they would ask the parole officer, you know, I got to get back to work. Nah, you know, you just got to stay here until I see you. When, to me, it should be priority. If you're working and you're doing the right thing and you come down on your lunch hour, why not see that individual, get him on out the way, send him back so he can finish his productive life? But it don't happen like that, and it's so stressful. I was talking to a parolee on a bus yesterday, and he was saying, man, it's so stressful, man, you know, coming down here. You know, if you notice the people's faces, they'll be smiling in the street, but once they get beyond that door, that smile just turns into anger and to frowns, you know, and then when they leave up out of there, they're smiling again because you never know what's going to happen when you go down there. However, by doing what you have to do, if you're blessed with a good parole officer, a parole officer that's understanding and that's humane and trying to help you, you can do it. But if you get one of the parole officers that speak to you the way they want to speak to you, harass you, etc., then parole is very hard to do and it's stressful. And that's, I used to run, you know, I used to upscan all the time, you know, but I just want the listeners to know that, when you are released, you know, you just got to, as long as you do the right thing. But if you're not finished, you know, with crime or whatever it is that's pulling you and taking you to institutions, then coming out on parole is just going to last momentarily, you know. And they're giving people so much time for so little violations, you know. There's people getting 24 months for one dirty urine and things of that nature. So I just wanted to say that.
You also said that you used to run and
yes.
Something happened. Something changed. What changed?
Well, I used to run, and matter of fact, they have a rabbit stamped on my record, you know, because I would always abscond, and I would be using. So the last time that I ran, I just, you know, something came over me, and I said, God, I'm really tired of this. You know, my plan and purpose for my life never worked. You know, I just show me yours. And I was told by somebody else to just keep reading the scriptures, and you'll get to understand life and yourself better. And it worked for me. I started doing it, and I realized that it was going to be a process, and I had to accept it as that, and patience, something I never had. So when I start incorporating this into my life and my living, you know, I started seeing people around me changing, and where there used to be doubt, you know, there was confidence. And you know, I was doing volunteer work for a year and a half, and because of that incident, after a year and a half, they tell me that I'm not allowed to do any volunteer work, you know, working with the kids and et cetera. So that was another drop for me, you know, because I was working with one organization. It's called the Inner City Youth Center. That's the Martin Luther King Park. And that was up under Miss Joyce Nixon. And she was very supportive of me. She would go to my final hearings and everything because they seen that I was giving it my all. And I thank God for those people because they was able to really help me and talk to me. And I listened to them and I believed in them because they encouraged me to believe in myself, you know. So when I was locked up, I was considered as an honored inmate. I knew how to go through the system and do the right thing because that's how I wanted to live in there. You know, I wouldn't use drugs. I wouldn't do nothing. And my mother once told me, she said, you got to learn how to live out here the same way you live in there, because the same God that you pray to get you out of here, out of there, is the same God out here that you must pray to keep you from going in there. So, you know, I just had a whole complete turnaround because that's what I wanted. I was tired of living the way I was living. You know, I have a beautiful family, and we closer than we ever been. You know, I lost my mother while I was in there. That's another issue. You know, they wouldn't let me see the view the body or go to the funeral, and I only had one mother, you know. And but I'm here, and I'm going to continue to strive and do the right thing. And, you know, it gets scary sometimes because I'm not used to sitting around waiting for them to come put the handcuffs on me. You know, when I see that coming, I ain't ready, you know. So today, and like the situation that I just come from up under, I just stayed there. I wouldn't run, and by grace of God, it's behind me now, you know. So I'm working as a mental health peer, part-time job, first job I ever had in my life. I'm 56 years old. Out of 56 years, I've only spent the total of 13 years in society. All the rest of my life was spent in and out of institutions, you know. So I enjoy being out here, seeing the seasons and the cars and hearing the cars and the kids. And it's just like living. My mother once told me, she said, you know, you're not living, you're existing. And I started replaying that when I started cleaning myself up. And I said, well, Mom's just right. That wasn't living. That was just existing. So I'm on a path to living today, you know. I'm on a path to living. I push the clock. I'm learning how to work the computer. I put my own file cases in. And it's beautiful. You know, sometimes my heart cries because I never dreamed that my life would be like this.
Well, thank you for sharing your story with us. It sounds like you've faced a lot of tests, and it sounds like you've been passing them lately, and I want to congratulate you and on your success, and I want to thank you for sharing your story with us. Perhaps it'll make a difference to somebody else, and it'll help them pass their tests. So thank you very much for being with us this morning. We have to end it here. Have a great day, and have good holidays.
Okay, and that's the same to you and your listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.